Tennessee, February 16, 1879, and at 6 weeks they decided to come to Texas.
Yes.
And they came to Young County, Graham, and lived there for quite a good 3 or 4 or 5 years. And one incident that I recall while we lived there, after I was 3 or 4 years old, why, we had a small place on a farm, and we had a tent in the front of our little place we lived. Then it seemed big to me, but I don't think it was over about 12 feet square. That was our living room, our dining room, and our where we cooked and eat. Then my father had, don't know whether he built it or how it come there, but we had a small room in the back, big, not very big, just about big enough for a bedstead, and was high enough to slip the trundle bed underneath. So we children that were born by during the time we were there slept on the trundle bed under there, and in the daytime we'd push it under the bed. Well, one of the things that happened I just barely could remember, we had a terrible thunderstorm one afternoon, and come up a cloud, and I'm sure my father pushed us under the bed or somewhere. But anyhow, one hailstone came through the tent and hit our table and shattered. And he told me, of course, later that he picked up the pieces, about a quart of them, and things like that. Now was the way we lived there. Well, we lived there, I was very small when that happened. Then we lived there in Young County for a while, and finally we moved over to Forney, a small place not far from Dallas. Well, we lived here and there, different places while we lived in over there. And my father worked at the gin, and he farmed some, and we did different things. And of course, they had 6 children then. And in my growing up days, I know we lived out on a little farm, and I was just a little girl. I don't guess as I were about 6 years old. And my mother was very careful of what she said to her children. If she told us anything, that was the way it was.
Yes.
And she wasn't much to spin stories to us or anything. And so I remember one thing, though, we had a saying there, she did. Says, if you put on a ragged dress and got up, she would say, well, the rag man will get you. Well, she said that to me when I was such a tiny little girl that I didn't know she didn't mean it. So I stayed pretty close to Mama in the kitchen around all morning. Well, long up in the day, well, I got dinner time, and she needed some chips. We had a wood stove to make a fire. So she told me to go out and get her some chips. Well, I didn't want to go out there. That rag man would get me. Well, I didn't have no idea what a rag man could be, but I was frightened I've never got over that fright yet, as old as I am. But I did go get the chips and didn't see the rag man. And she never, I don't suppose, ever knew the fright that it gave me to go out there in that woodpile and get those chips.
Yes.
Well, as we traveled on down, we, of course, we lived there on farms from place to place. And one of my brothers wasn't too well there. It was cold. And so after a good many after the winters were kind of getting hard, the doctors told him if he didn't move south that he wouldn't be able to raise that boy. So he began to think about going south. And we finally made up our minds that they did. The first move we made, we came from that little place to Portland, right across from Corpus, and there's where we landed first in about 1902.
What was the name of the place you came from?
Forney.
Forney.
Forney, yes, it was Forney. And so we settled there and stayed there about a year. Well, there wasn't anything really, that's a long time ago, and there wasn't anything much to do around there. So we stayed there a year, and my daddy had to have something to do to make a living for us. Well, while he was there, he hauled water about 12 miles with a team of mules for a man, a Mr. Willisie. And that, of course, well, didn't pay much. You had to go 12 miles for water, you know, around the bay. You don't get water by digging. It's mostly salt.
Yeah.
And so he used to drive 12 miles and back with it. It looks a little, the thing he had to haul in was a wagon, of course, and they didn't have the 10 tanks that we put on there for galvanized or whatever they might be on the wagons now, but they had just cedar tanks around, just built like these oil tanks on the cars we have now to haul gasoline. Well, that's what he hauled the water in. He'd haul and fill his barrels, what he needed. Then he'd take the water, rest of it, over to this man that hired him to haul. Well, that wasn't much of a living. In fact, you couldn't do much there. We didn't have much. It was just a very, very small place.
How much did they charge for water? Do you have any idea?
I don't remember. I was about 12 or 13, about yes. 13, I guess, then. And I don't know too much about the prices of things at that time. But anyway, we stayed there, and we went to school there in a little place. Of course, during our first years in Texas, and a good many years later, schools were not what they supposed to be. No ears, I guess they were. We had no money to buy to pay teachers much that damn time, and our school seasons were short, too, about 7 months. Anyway, well, we went to school a little there, and then my daddy found out that Mathis had needed a man to work in the gin. So he had worked in the gin in North Texas before he came south. So we went to work and Upton moved in a wagon up here to Mathis. Well, we, Mom and I and the other children, me being the older one, we moved out on a farm. That man needed some cotton pickers that damn time, so they had a tent, and we went out there on the farm and went in that tent and went to picking cotton. My daddy stayed in town all week and worked at the gin and walked in home Saturday night, and then Monday morning early he'd get up and walk back to Mathis, which was about 3 miles, to work again that week. And he made about as much as we made, and all of us together hardly made anything. Well, we met, after we'd stayed here a while, we met a man here that was the foreman of the Mathis property here then, and which Mathis is named for me. He owned this, lots of this land here. And Mr. Coffin, he has his, part of his family live here yet. But he was not a very large man, but he had a big heart. He was one of the finest men I ever met in my life. Well, he found my father was honest and upright, and said when he said a thing, that was the way it was. He didn't make no bones about it. He didn't try to beat nobody. Well, in fact, Mr. Coffin said my daddy's word was as good as his bond. That was the way he spoke. Well, when we got here and they got acquainted, while my father made friends with this Mr. Coffin, and he was a wonderful person, and he began to see that he needed help to get on his feet. He was a man that would do something to get on his feet. Well, he took him under his wing, and of course, during that day and time, there were not very many places in this town here, and farms or anything, but he did have a little home here at that little place, and a small crop place there. Well, we worked there for a while, and he was so good to my daddy. He just helped him in every way he could. He helped him finally to get a hold of a team, and we lived on that little place a while. And then there wasn't very many people that owned their homes for fee, for it most of the ranching country at that time. And he would help him to, we were sharecroppers then, for after we got in with this Mr. Coffin. We were sharecroppers for quite a good many years along. And when a sharecropper, the way they had to do then, they'd pick up the best farm they could get at that time. Then later on, if they saw someone move from a better farm, we moved. And we used to say our wagon could place everything in it. We could just do it and put everything we had almost in one wagon. We knew so well how to pack it. But we did keep moving from one good farm to another. And of course, the houses that we had to live in at that day were just ordinary one-wall houses. Some of them were sealed overhead, most of them not. And they were just no screens. You never knew what a screen was in that damn time. And of course, you know, you don't know because you're too young. But flies, we had scads of them then, but that's before we got rid of them. We don't have many now, this damn time. And mosquitoes, after the rains, they would come, oh, just droves of them about night. And if you were lucky enough, you had a mosquito bar to sleep on. Otherwise, while you built, got some coals out of the cook stove and got some rags and made you smoke, and sometimes you didn't know whether the smoke or the mosquitoes was the worst. Well, that's the way we did. There was no such a thing as a screen never on any of the houses. And the houses were, like I say, very small, and they were just not much convenience to them. And as far as you're having help with houses, they help to have, but they didn't have it. I know in one place we had, my father had a man to help some. Now the people near that damn town, people worked. The families, if they didn't work, they didn't get nothing because you couldn't hire help, you couldn't much help, and if you did, you wouldn't have nothing left because nothing sold for anything much.
You mean the members of the family, worked?
Everybody worked, but the old song used to say, everybody works in our home but our old dad, but that was a song I heard years ago. Well, anyway, like I said, we had this place, and if you had anybody to help you, they nearly always, the renter would maybe get some logs or a piece of mesquite limbs. And of course, they're as crooked as anything can be, and they could join them together and kind of make a little place for them to camp out during the time they would help you. And as we put our land in, we had people from Mexico to come over and put the land in. That was the way most of the farms were put in. It was all done by a grubbing hole and an axe, and the way that they did it, I know after I got old enough to know something about it, and even after I married, and we had a little place of our own. They'd maybe be several families come, and you'd measure off one family an acre, a half an acre, whatever, he'd make that, and he'd fix that, and he'd dig those trees and get them down, and then they would take the axe and cut the limbs all off and pile them in the pile. Then they would take all the trunk that was fit for a fence post, those were saved, and other pieces that was 4 feet long enough for cordwood, they would stack those, and maybe the man then that was having the work done would sell that cordwood. That's the way they got a little money. Well, going back a little bit farther back, and I've gone a little further, let me go back a little bit now. In North Texas, now I didn't do that here, but in North Texas, you know, the farming there was so different to what it is here. You could grow different things. You could grow cotton, corn, corn pretty good, but not down here. But we used to, farmers lived way off here and there and everywhere, not very close together. And we used to have a man that had one horse and a little hack, as we called him, and he'd fix him up a little kind of like we have here on these campers, only not as big and not as elaborate, and fix shelves in it, you know. Well, he would have things to pedal, and he had him a little bell, and he'd start out and he'd get those things, and he had shelves in there, and he had calico, which we call print now, 5 cents a yard, and he had needles and thread and maybe candy, I can't remember, I was pretty small, and things like that. Whenever the women didn't get to go to town very often, and a lot of times they'd need little articles that way, and if you had the money, which you didn't have very much of, you could pay that, and if you didn't, maybe you'd have some fryers or some eggs, or maybe you'd get 5 cents a dozen for your eggs. Everything was just dirt cheap. And whenever you'd hear the little bell ting ring, the wee children and mama would run, and every other woman and her children the same way when the peddler come. That was a great day for us. We'd go out and they'd buy a few little things, you know, it didn't amount to anything, but that's the way they did a lot of their shopping. And then maybe if some neighbor man had a one extra calf that he didn't need. He'd fatten it up and he'd fix it all up, and then he'd have him away somewhere or another to fix it clean. He was very careful about it. And he'd come by and ring his bell, and you'd go out and pick you a piece of meat and go in and cook it, a beef calf. And that's the way he'd make a little money. It was very cheap and very ordinary. And anyway, whenever we, like in the South now, they didn't do that down here. When I never saw any peddling done that way here.
And that peddling was in North Texas.
That's in the North Texas part, yes. That was one of the things I had to let out. And we had a great look forward to the peddler coming.
Yes.
He didn't come too often, I think about once a week. Well, now, as far as getting around, the only way you had, if you were able to get a hold of a hack, you did it, went that. But most of the people went in wagons, even after we'd come south. While they most of us, we all went in a wagon. We went to church in a wagon, and we went to, if we visited very far, we went in a wagon, and of course, neighbors and friends. You had to go in the morning and spend the day, or else you didn't get much visiting done.
Yes.
And so that's the way we did a lot of our visiting. And if they went to any kind of a gathering at night, if it wasn't but 2 or 3 miles, if they had a bunch of children, which most all of them had 4, 5, or 6, and some more than that, of course, why, they'd have to go in the wagon because the children couldn't walk back home asleep. And they'd go in the wagons. Well, one incident that happened after we come south here, it even happened here at Mathis. One man here had quite a family of children, and I wasn't in, it wasn't anything but my folks went to that night, so I heard about it but didn't see it. But anyway, they had 6 or 7 or 8 children, I forget, a pretty good bunch of them. They loaded them in the wagon and went to the party or whatever it was they went to. And it might not have been very far, but they had to go in the wagon.
Yes.
Well, when they got home and unloaded, lo and behold, they missed a kid. And they had to turn in then and off and go back and get that baby. They always took the children and took a pallet, laid on the floor, and the children piled down, go to sleep. For some reason, they missed that one and come home without it. Well, those are some of the things that happened in that's comical and
yes.
A little bit funny and not too funny either. But to be left home, it was, of course, after people have waves of go, and our children our day and time, they stay awake all night anyhow, mom and daddy do. Well, anyway, going on, and some of the things that we had happen to us, now, like I say, with our health, we were always kind to our people that helped us. Of course, they were most of them very poor people, come from the out of Mexico, some of them did, and some down in the valley. The valley wasn't in irrigation like it is now. They didn't have the dams and the canals to make the crops and their citrus fruits and things when we first come south. Of course, that was in 1903 when we first come down here. And it was a long time before there was much going on in the valley. Well, these people would come up, and of course, they had nothing whatsoever. And whenever we'd have them in, to help us burn, even grubbing, or just maybe in the spring, I mean, it's cotton picking time, we might need a little help there. But we'd always try to be as kind to them as we could. We treated them as well. Now, of course, not everybody, I'm sure, would treat them fair and square, but anybody would give them a square deal.
Yes.
And in grubbing, they were just like people, any other people. Some of them would grub their land just as perfectly as they could. Every stump would be out and all the brush burned just like they should be. And then other times, we'd get one maybe half an acre place. Maybe when he would grub his, if he had the stumps a little hard to get out, he might just fix him covered over just a little bit, and you'd go on. And then the man, when he went to plowing with his team, they learned as they drove them along, those mules and horses would learn. They'd come off carefully, and whenever they begin to, they could tell whenever they were against one of those stumps, because it when they showed us if there was collars, they could tell, and they'd quit instantly so they didn't break any of the machinery. And we didn't have any. And the way the first plowing was done, and mostly the vine crops, now we had cotton and corn a little bit, not much corn in the south because it never did do too good, but we'd have maize and cotton. Then we'd have cucumbers a few later in the years, in the later years, but we'd have some watermelons. And the way they did the plowing most of it, they'd take a Georgia stock, which is just a plain little plow with one sweep to it.
Yes.
And they'd take a horse or a mule and put to that, plow up one side of the road, turn around and top up, fly back, then on the other side, took all that walking to get one row planted, plowed, and whatever it happened to be you were doing. And then they had the little double shovel too, which was two little sweeps instead of the one bigger one. And they used more of that mower in cotton and other things, but the vine crops, and you'll always use what they call the Georgia stock. Well, the time did come when they had little cultivators. You walked still, but you could plow one row at a time. And that cultivator, you'd walk along and had a handle on both sides, and that was like the little double shovel had two little sweeps on each side.
Now, Ms. Miller, we discussed about your courtship, and you was telling me about the first time that your husband kissed you. I wonder if you'd like to relate that story again.
Well, we had been engaged nearly a year before he kissed me, and it was just a pick, really. And he never embraced me at all in his life until we were married.
Yes.
And, of course, and I know one night he was telling me goodbye, and the children think it's so terribly funny since they learned it about it, my in-laws and children, daughters and all. When we were standing at the horse trough, and he went to kiss me goodnight and dropped his hat in the horse trough, and of course that was a lot of fun to them to think about him dropping his hat in the horse trough.
How did you meet him?
I think I was visiting some friends and met him, and we went together, and we weren't engaged until had been together nearly a year, I guess, and then we were engaged over a year before we married.
Did you meet him here or in North
here.
Texas?
No, I didn't come. See, I come south.
Oh, yeah.
I was about 13.
Oh.
No, I met him here. Yeah, he was here. Large family.
Yeah.
And I lived with him 35 years, and of course he passed on, and lived with him about him 35 years.
Yeah.
And I had five children. I have three boys gone already after they were men. The other two I have left, the youngest and the middle boy. And I didn't ever have any girls.
Yeah. Can you remember any revivals or anything like that? Any special preachers or?
Well, I don't remember so much. The earlier days when I come to Memphis, we didn't have very many, but there was enough people to really have one church, and they just had sometimes they'd come in and preach like. But the only revivals now between here and on the Ellis Highway down here at our bridge, why, just below our bridge where it is, still is now, it wasn't there, no bridge there, it was just a ford there, ford across. There was some nice timber there, and in the summer when our crops were all gathered and everything through with, why, people had a little time, and they had what we called a camp meeting. People had some few would go and have tents, and those that they'd go in wagons, and maybe if they had buggies, they'd go in buggies to the services. And the men would get together and just get some lumber. I think they borrowed from the lumber yard, maybe. And they would make the benches. They didn't have cushions in the backs either.
Yes.
But then they were all right. And we'd go and have the morning services. Of course, we didn't ever camp out, but some did. And we went that way and had our camp meetings. And of course, everybody would go, whether it didn't make any difference who was preaching, we'd go. I would like to tell you this about how we did when in our, of course, we had no hospitals in there. anything, and one doctor generally to a town, and we called him the little one horse doctor, and usually he's pretty good. And whenever anybody was sick, of course, all everybody was sick in their homes. Where they were born in their homes, they were sick in their homes, they died in their homes, they married in their homes. The home was a center of everything.
Yeah.
And we, if anybody had a sick person, if they needed help, the neighbors were good. They'd help one another out, and when a neighbor would need help, they'd take turns and help sit with them and get through that way. And if the neighbor, if the sick person did pass on, then there was nearly always one fine man in the neighborhood that would kind of take the lead. He'd get out when this person would pass away. He'd get out and gather up some of their friends, and they'd get their own grubbing hoes, and, not grubbing hoes, but spades and things that they needed to dig the grave with. They would dig that grave, and then some of the other men, maybe there'd be one carpenter in the bunch. There were no caskets, and everything was called a coffin then. With a lot of, there was, and you could get a hold of very good. So they would get some good lumber. I don't know just what kind they'd get out of the lumber yard. And one man would, that was a best carpenter, why, he would build a box, they called it. And they would take white sateen, not satin, just sateen, and some tacks, and they'd line that, but that sateen looked very pretty.
Yeah.
Then they would take some black material and line the outside, and it didn't look bad, I bet it. And I don't think it would cost over $5 to $6 or $7 to build one altogether.
Yeah.
When they got ready to bury him, they, all the funerals were at the graveside, and everyone stood. And we nobody ever saw a bouquet, but we didn't have such things. And those men that dug the grave, they'd stand there, and whenever it was over, they'd fill that grave and fix it, and then people went home. Now that was the way they did that.
Yes. They, how did they mark graves with it?
They just stick a little board up there until later on, if when the time come, if you could ever get a little stone, why then you'd. But everybody would have a, and write on it with a pencil or some indelible ink and keep it that way, and that's the way that was done.
Yes.
And you could get one whole row then, it ran, it was through, and you could get two rows by going around. And gathering corn and things, you did everything by hand, your hoeing and everything, and your cotton chopping and all that, we didn't have. And if you had feed maize, they would take and cut the maize heads off, and then maybe they'd bun it, or some would cut it, and they had machetes to do that and bun tie and fix it and stack it up and then put that up for feed. And it has been so dry here in the South a few times when we were first here, and it's just, have, we do have droughts now, but I know when we first come here in the South, we did have times that the stocks really suffered, and we had the mesquite beans though. And that was a godsend, because the people used to go out, and they have at times, gathered beans and put in the barn and fed the stock. And a few times they did cut some careless weeds and put in to take care of the stock. And when it was so dry, we had, they had no money, no way to get anything, no transportation, you know, much.
Yes.
There wasn't nothing, no way bringing things in except by train. We had no way to get stuff from one place to another like they do now. So that made that bad. And when we first come south, of course, we, if we didn't have cows, why, the Mathis people had these longhorn cattle. Of course, that was all we had in this country then. And they would, if you wanted cows to milk, if you couldn't get a hold of one of your own, well, you could pin their cows and break them, because you had to break them in. And you'd tie their heads to a post and tie the legs, behind legs, so they couldn't kick you. And in time, they were gentle. And you could milk them, and then you always took care of the calves, of course, and that wasn't in the contract. You didn't, they wouldn't let you milk them.
Yes.
And that was the way we got some of the people. Now, we did, after I married the first year of my married life in 1901, my husband couldn't milk, but we had calves. He could get a horse and bring them in, And then I'd get me a pole, a great big stick, and a rope, and I'd put that cat around, I'd get that rope on her, and then I'd swing that rope around, get on her post, and I'd tie her legs, and I always kept that stick when that kept me, they were afraid of me, and me afraid of them, they were afraid of them. So we, our first year, that's what we had meals, was doing it that way. So that was, and of course, like I say, we're going back to the, no mosquitoes, no netting, or screens. When the mosquitoes would come so terribly bad, we've had the horses and cows come in, you know, at night, just about when the mosquitoes would rise. And they'd come and just you could hear them coming, and you'd go to the woodpile and you'd fix you up a bunch of chips. It was fine and a lot of dirt with it so it wouldn't blaze. You'd make your fire, and they'd almost get on top of the fire, but they would stand there, and that would keep the smoke would keep the mosquitoes. They roll and groan like they had colic. They'd be so terribly bad.
You mean the animals had sense enough to stand in the smoke?
Oh, they learned that. They come to the house just when those mosquitoes start, they had sense enough. They learned it. And they just come just to run into that smoke.
Well, I do know.
The animals are terribly smart.
Oh, yes.
They really are terribly smart. And so that's why we did some of the things like that. Well, we didn't have many schools, and not much schools, and like I said before, we just had about 7 months of school. That we needed to get out soon enough. We had to work in the field, and our vacation time was in the summer when our crop was laid by. And we had to pick it in the fall, and so that way it would, our schools, we usually, for a long time, there were not enough people to have more than two teachers. Usually two teachers. There would be a lady teacher for the smaller children and a man teacher for the older children. And of course, we didn't have a whole lot of different things to study. We had reading, spelling, arithmetic, and grammar. And later on, when they got bigger, they had some history and things of that kind. But they never had a whole lot. But what they did have, they really studied. And after they got a little farther along in school, there were a few more people. They did better in spelling than most anything, because on a Friday afternoon, they'd always, so many times, we'd have recitations and readings, as they called them later, and we don't have that now. But the two children would stand up, and one would choose one speller, and another would choose, and they lined up all the children. Well, then the teacher would begin giving the words out to see which side could win. If you missed a word, you took your seat. And the other fella, and then the other side would try to spell it, and whenever they spelled it, everyone that couldn't spell it had to sit down. Well, the one that stood up the longest won the game.
Regular spelling bee.
And that was pretty regular. And really, they did learn a lot about spelling. They generally had a good spelling book, and it was words, most of them, that they had studied too.
Yes.
And it was kind of a fair deal with the children. But I know and I'm no speller now at all, but I've had children that finished high school to say, "Grandma, how do you spell so-and-so?" They just don't spell now like they did then, because they studied it, they made a game out of it.
Yes.
And they really did do good at it. And our way we had our language, they called it grammar then, they put it in diagrams, and you put your subject and your predicate, your verb, and lined it out on lines. And your prepositions and so forth on. And that was really interesting, get on the board and put all that marking down and put your words where they ought to be.
Yes.
That was pretty interesting and a good way to learn.
Yes.
Even though it was a simple thing.
Do you remember any unusual names for things? A certain type of wagon was called a low boy or a high boy or something like that.
No, I don't believe we did. Not that I can recall. No, I don't remember any unusual wagons.
Or unusual names for anything that you can think of that has a different name now.
No, I don't. Now, we had course, when we first come to Mathis, there was no any way to get anywhere or do anything except by the wagon. As I said, we had one railroad coming through here. And the people, when we come here, there was no electricity, no bank, one little bit of a store. And there was one section house, no depot at all. And they were building a store here when we first came here. Then they were making it two-story. They had the store and the lower floor. And then we had a room up above where people that danced. My daddy never let us dance. And I didn't want to know him. And so those that danced come around, get there. Well, they'd candle the floor and dance on it. Then Sunday, well, we had to be pretty careful to go up there for our young union Sunday school. We see there wasn't enough people of one kind to have one church at that time, and so everybody went in for together, and we had our Sunday schools that way. And our stores at that time, you could go in, and on one side you'd maybe find some kind of piece goods or different things and things on the line. Maybe then on the other side you'd have what you had to buy for each. You didn't buy too much because you didn't have the money to buy with, and then you raised a lot of it yourself. You kept your, tried to have your chickens and your eggs and your milk, and there wasn't a lot of money to buy with. And the men, when they first come here, a lot of them had to mortgage their teams if they weren't, well, they're not too well known, and some of them too honest too, maybe they might get by without paying up if they could. You know, there's all kind of people in all kind of places.
Yeah.
But the people would, most of them would have to mortgage their teams and tools, which runs them very much. And then the merchant, I don't know how he managed to get the stuff, but they would mortgage what they had to get enough stuff to run them until the crop was gathered. And if they had different crops, well, they'd pay along, but most of it was all done in the fall. You settled up, and you maybe had a little left, and not too much. You never made very much, and you'd have a little bit left maybe after you settled in the fall, and then you'd start over again the next year, just the same old thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way a lot of that was done.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything that you can think of that you